staying neutral in the face of conflict. Many countries decided against taking sides in the Russia-Ukraine war. But what does neutrality mean? And can a nation truly avoid siding with either? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Many countries have decided to avoid taking sides in Russia's invasion of Ukraine. 35 nations abstained from voting on a UN resolution condemning the conflict. And Russia's president demanded Ukraine be declared neutral as a condition to ending the war. But the concept of neutrality is under question. The invasion led to Finland and Sweden, that had long been militarily neutral, applying to join the NATO alliance. India is officially not aligned with either Russia or Ukraine, but it has faced criticism for doubling its imports of Russian oil. Even Switzerland, known worldwide for neutrality, is debating its meaning. Media reports say the government vetoed German and Danish requests to supply Swiss-made armored vehicles to Ukraine, as that would violate Switzerland's neutrality. But the country followed much of the West by imposing sanctions and freezing Russian assets in February. The Swiss president said neutrality doesn't mean being indifferent to aggression.
Warum haben wir so entschieden?
Why did we take this decision? Other democracies must be able to rely on Switzerland. States that stand for international law must be able to rely on Switzerland. And states that uphold human rights must be able to rely on Switzerland. The Federal Council examined the question of neutrality under this light. Playing into the hands of an aggressor is not neutral.
All right, let's take a look at what neutrality means. It broadly means not taking sides in armed conflict between warring countries and abstaining from providing military assistance. Countries interpret neutrality differently. For example, Finland and Sweden are more relaxed about their status and describe themselves as non-aligned, whereas neutral countries in Europe are bound by the policies of the European Union. Most countries declare their neutrality, while some are permanently neutral by either constitutional decree or as part of a previous treaty. During hostilities, a neutral state may repeal, change, or modify its position. All right, let's bring in our guests. Joining us on the line from New Delhi, Happimohan Jacob, Associate Professor of Diplomacy at Jawaharlal Nehru University and founder of the Council for Strategic and Defense Research. In Zurich, Mark Farha, author and adjunct professor of sociology at the University of Zurich. And in Oslo, Glenn Deason, professor of international relations at the University of Southeast Norway. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us on the program today. Mark, let me start with you today. There seems to be some confusion out there when it comes to the concept of neutrality. So I want to take a step back for a moment and ask you about the difference between the law of neutrality versus the politics of neutrality, how those two things differ.
That's a tough one. Well, I can speak from a Swiss perspective because Switzerland is obviously known as maybe the first or still the only state maybe in the world that has neutrality enshrined in its very constitution. And that goes back actually a long time. There was a battle in 1516 in Marignano where the Swiss, you know, were trying to overextend themselves and were warriors, still had the Vatican Guard today, if you remember, they're mercenaries. And after that kind of bitter defeat that they had there, they came to the conclusion that neutrality would be a better option. This was only enshrined really after the Council of Vienna, 1815, Council of Paris, and then later, as you probably know, the Convention Den Haag, 1907, and so on. But it is something that comes naturally to Switzerland because it's a country kind of perched here in the middle of Europe between contesting powers. You know, taking sides is a costly affair if you bet on the wrong horse or if you're caught in the sort of crosshairs of these contending powers. And that's also why Switzerland then became, of course, the center in the world for diplomacy. And neutrality then is integrally linked to the peace that we've had in Switzerland and the prosperity. And other countries then look to Switzerland as a paradigm. But today, with this new conflict, of course, this is all in danger and questioned again. But the legacy of it is basically to keep out of these conflicts, to preserve one's own stability, and to act as a platform for diplomacy and peaceful conflict mediation.
Glenn, was the concept of neutrality interpreted differently in the past, say during the Cold War era or during World War II? Was it interpreted differently in the past than it is today?
Well, as my colleague suggested, it is interpreted in different ways. I guess during the Cold War, it was mostly, it was very much defined as obviously not being part of either of the blocs in order to reduce the tension from this bloc politics. That's why we saw in Europe during the Cold War, we had this belt of neutral states. So Finland, Sweden, Austria, Switzerland, which kind of created a buffer zone, making Germany the only front line. I think we linked it more to membership in military alliances. But of course, neutrality also encompasses not taking sides in any armed conflicts, such as providing weapons to one side during a war. But I think some of the ideas about neutrality was obscured after the Cold War. It's common to argue now that neutrality is only over the past 3 months began to collapse. But it began to collapse soon thereafter, after the Cold War, because, there was an absence of a pan-European security architecture. So we saw that NATO began to take on the role of representing Europe. So NATO expansionism essentially became the main force for what we refer to as European integration. So neutrality effectively then meant to be marginalized from the only security architecture there was on the continent. So the whole idea of neutrality has changed a lot during the post-Cold War era, which is why we also see that it's been collapsing over the past 30 years.
Mark, I saw you nodding along to some of what Glenn was saying there, and it looked like you might have wanted to jump in. So go ahead.
Well, just a footnote, but I think we all agree, but this is a debate in Switzerland right now, because definitionally neutrality meant non-military intervention. And now the question with sanctions is that a military intervention or not? Does that violate the law of neutrality, which is enshrined in the Swiss Constitution? The Swiss Constitution is not explicit on this. Mm. A military intervention is the red line, definitely. Mm. And so delivering weapons to a conflict zone has traditionally been seen as something prohibited by Swiss law.
Well, Mark, let me follow up with you on that point, because, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, Switzerland essentially is having its neutrality tested somewhat publicly right now. You know, there is this debate over Swiss neutrality. It's been intensifying due to the war in Ukraine. The fact that the Swiss government signed up to the sanctions on Russia, you know, as you mentioned, some viewed that as a sign that Switzerland has abandoned its neutrality. Is this debate in Switzerland going to grow? Are we going to see more lawmakers bringing it up, talking about it? How much is the public involved in this debate right now?
Well, that's a very good point, because all these decisions were made top down without recourse to the public. And Switzerland is the only direct democracy in the world. It says in the Swiss Constitution, the people are the sovereign. So at the end, if there's a referendum, they can overturn any decision made by the Federal Council. But the Federal Council unilaterally decided to, in its essence, violate or soften, if you want, the neutrality of Switzerland. I would just add a footnote too to the Cold War. It's not true that Switzerland was entirely neutral even before during the Cold War. It always was siding, you know, with the U.S. in a sense. And also, you remember 1991, Switzerland participated in the sanctions against Iraq. So people forget that maybe a little bit. So there's a precedent there. There has been, as been said by my colleague, certainly after the Cold War, certainly a softening of this whole thing. And Switzerland has a partnership with peace with NATO. So even though it's not a member of NATO, de facto kind of is. So, you know, all the EU is another example. Switzerland decided, that people decided to vote against membership in the EU. But the Federal Council opened all kinds of doors to the EU that de facto Switzerland almost became a member of the EU. And the same now with these sanctions here. Now, you're right, there is probably, if this continues, and if the Federal Council today or tomorrow decides to deliver, you know, munitions to Germany and then to the Ukraine, Denmark, then I think there will be a national referendum or initiative. Now, how that will turn out is another question, because there are some people that are for and against. But I think that we will come to that eventually, because neutrality is something sacred to a lot of Swiss. Maybe not to all, maybe not even to a majority, but to a lot. This was one of the bedrocks of the country.
Happyman, let me ask you, India is not officially aligned with either Russia or Ukraine. I want to look for a moment at the difference between neutrality and non-alignment. How is one different from the other?
Right. Thank you, Mohammed, for asking that question. I think this is often misunderstood by a lot of people globally as to what is India's stance when it comes to some of these issues. As you know, historically, ever since India gained independence in 1947, it has claimed itself to be a non-aligned power internationally. It has not aligned itself with either the Soviet bloc or the US-led bloc during the Cold War years. Except when, of course, India felt an acute sense of insecurity. So, for example, during the 1971 war between India and Pakistan over Bangladesh, at that point of time, India signed a piece of treaty and friendship with the USSR. But for most part of it, India has claimed that it is a non-aligned country. Now, you asked me the difference between non-alignment and neutrality. In the way we see in India, neutrality means that you don't take a position on any external warranties issue. Either the two blocs are fighting or two countries are fighting, you have no opinion on that. You don't take a decision on that. You don't act on it. Whereas non-alignment would mean that in general you are not aligned to a country, is not aligned to either of the two blocs. But it will continue to have an opinion on what is happening. It will continue to take a position or take an action which is in its own national interest, which means you have not neutered the country of its opinion. What you have done basically is that in general, we are not aligned to any of the two blocs or any of the blocs out there. But we will take a decision on a particular issue based on the merits of circumstances of it. I think that is a very significant distinction to understand, because India is not a neutral power. India, as you know, during the period of Jawaharlal Nehru and various other prime ministers, has been pretty active on the global scene, talking about, say, for example, decolonization or apartheid, or the ill effects of the Cold War, etc. So it was an active power. At the same time, it was a non-aligned power. So it was not a neutral power. It always had its opinion. It put forward solutions. It mediated in the Korean War, for example. So it was an active power, not a neutral power. It's a non-aligned active power, not a neutral power.
Happyman, let me also ask you, I mean, India has come under a lot of pressure by countries like the U.S. and other Western countries to try to change its stance when it comes to Russia and Ukraine. Do you think that there's any scenario by which India would actually take a stance against Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
I think the thinking in Delhi was that when the war began earlier this year by the Russians in Ukraine, we imagined that this was going to be a quick war. I think much of the international community believed that to be the case. Like, for example, it happened in 2014. So that assumption has turned out to be completely erroneous. So if this war persists for a very long time, if this is going to lead to a humanitarian tragedy in Ukraine, I believe you are probably going to look at a lot more pressure on India, both internally and externally, to change its opinion on what's going on. Let me also sort of caveat my argument by saying that India has not really supported the Russian war. Say, for example, in 2014, India had said that both sides have legitimate interests. India has not made that argument in 2022. If you look at India's explanations of both at the United Nations Security Council and the United Nations General Assembly, India has made the argument that it is important to honor international law, sovereignty, safeguarding sovereignty is important, external aggression is not a good idea. It has made all those correct argumentation in its explanation. And yet India refused to, vote against Russia or condemn Russia. So by not condemning Russia, one could make the argument that India is subtly pro-Russia, right? Now, it is subtly pro-Russia not because it likes what Russia is doing, but because of the geopolitical environment India is located in, which is, you're looking at a very difficult geopolitical environment where China is actually, putting pressure on India. So I think to answer your question very quickly, Mohammed, I think If this war persists and if this war becomes bloodier, there will be a lot more pressure on India internally and externally. I think there will be some rethinking.
Glenn, going forward, will the countries that maintain their neutrality still play an important diplomatic role in finding political solutions to conflict, or do you think that their influence will wane?
Well, I think their influence will begin to decline because there's hardly any more neutral countries left in Europe. I think now that Sweden and Finland especially has argued that they will join NATO, I think you will see less and less of this, and they will be seen to be participants of the conflict. And by taking sides, there's also less of a diplomatic role they can have, which is why we've seen more of the diplomatic role having been shifted towards Turkey. Now, Turkey obviously is a NATO member, but still you see them having more of an independent foreign policy and openly stating, for example, they're not going to join in on all of these sanctions. So I think that the decline of neutrality will definitely have an impact on the diplomacy and the ability to promote peace. It also has to be said that I think that the decline in neutrality is also not just preventing diplomacy, but it's also provoking a lot of conflicts and war. And I think Finland might regret this decision, because keep in mind what happened to Ukraine. I think it's often a common narrative now that if Ukraine had been in NATO, then there wouldn't have been a war. But I think in reality, it was that the U.S. and NATO efforts to end Ukrainian neutrality that eventually provoked Russia. Because if we see what the Ukrainian experience was from its independence under President Kuchma, the whole idea was that they should never join NATO without Russia. If they join with Russia, then it would be fine. But without Russia, there would be a front line against Russia that would undermine the neutrality. So they tried to be neutral until the color revolution in 2004, when this was the Western-backed one, which was linked to NATO expansion. And then relations again deteriorated until 2010, when Yanukovych was elected and Ukraine again pushed the idea that it was a neutral state. Then things got calm again. And then we saw the toppling of Yanukovych in 2014 with Western support. And this is what then, again, unraveled the conflict, as this was seen to be another effort by NATO to rob Ukraine of its neutrality. And even the 2015 Minsk agreement, that was seen by Russia to a large extent as a way of cementing Ukraine's neutrality. But unfortunately, it never went anywhere. And so I think that definitely the decline of neutrality or collapse of neutrality in Europe will continue to make diplomacy more and more difficult and create more areas of conflict.
Mark, following up on what Glenn was saying there, let me ask you about perceptions of neutrality around the world right now. At a moment like this, does it seem to you that more people are viewing the concept of neutrality negatively?
Well, yes. I mean, I think there was in different cases now in this Ukraine war, Russia war, which is somewhat a sibling war, right, if you think about it, between brothers almost. And the media has, of course, stoked this haters, Russia phobia everywhere, tennis players being banned, what have you, which is very uncanny and regrettable, really. I do think neutrality has gone out of vogue, right, which is very unfortunate, especially for a country like Switzerland. And that's why it's especially, galling to see Switzerland, jump into this so precipitously. And I would say there's a broader crisis here, frankly speaking. Neutrality is not something that's even foreign to the United States. If you think about the founding fathers, they were saying, we don't want to go abroad to search for monsters to destroy. And then over time, America got involved and embroiled in more and more wars. Recently, we know as well, and it became de facto an empire, so to speak. And someone like, John Mersheimer, the famous realist, warned against that as a realist, saying we shouldn't go, abroad and become an empire. And we have, the United States system as well. And Switzerland now is unfortunately also jumping on this bandwagon to a degree. But I would say both cases, in the United States and in Switzerland and other cases, these decisions were made, I repeat, top down. It wasn't really a democratic process. There never was really a vote on whether we should go into Iraq or into Libya or into other countries, now Ukraine, etc. A lot of these decisions were taken top down, especially in Switzerland. And I think there will be a populist sort of resentment at some point because there's a huge economic crisis brewing. We should maybe talk about that too, because all these countries are going to probably suffer more from the sanctions than Russia is. And that's a very important point to underscore too, I think, that breaking this neutrality is, yes, it's endangering global peace because diplomacy is no longer on the table. And a country like Switzerland will find it difficult to act as a diplomat. But also economically, I think the consequences are very severe and not necessarily positive for anyone, Ukrainian, Russian, European, American civilians. So I think that's important.
Happimon, at a time when dialogue and diplomacy oftentimes aren't achieving their aims when it comes to trying to find political solutions to conflicts, different parts of the world. Are institutions like the UN in decline?
I think there is absolutely no doubt about the fact that the United Nations is on a terminal decline. We hardly hear of the United Nations being able to do anything anywhere around the world, and it's such a pity. In any case, the one organization that is supposed to safeguard peace and security of the international system, which is the United Nations Security Council, has become so defunct. In any case, at this point of time, Russia is on peace. It has always been on the UN Security Council. So I think this argument that a lot of us who have been making from the global south, including India, that the global international organizations need a fundamental restructuring. Today's United Nations Security Council or global various other global institutions do not represent the reality of the contemporary international system. These were set up at the end of the Second World War to suit the victors and their geopolitical aims. They hold absolutely no value today. So it's unfortunate that we don't have any credible systems or structures in place in order to mediate during crisis or to bring about peace and security. So I think, you know, notwithstanding what happens at the end of this war in Ukraine or in Russia, there is a serious rethinking that is required by the international community on what kind of structures or systems are required. For keeping peace going forward. I think this is something that has been demanded by the powers of the global south.
Glenn, there are many countries in Europe that may be rethinking their neutrality right now because of the war in Ukraine. But what about other countries around the world? Are a lot of other countries around the world struggling with this as well right now?
Well, from my perspective, at least the way I see it, I think it's mainly a European problem. Because we spoke about India, but again, they're trying to adapt to a new reality. Again, when you have countries like India, they see the rise of China, they might be concerned, and therefore seeking closer partnerships with the United States, Japan, and other countries in the region. On the other hand, you also see that the non-aligned countries like India is very apprehensive about not being seen to join an alliance that targets China. So you therefore see a very cautious language that is. They want to be these formations to be pro-Asian and not anti-Chinese, for example. So effectively not be seen as going against the Chinese. So for this reason, I don't think neutrality in Asia, for example, is falling apart in the form of a development of an Asian NATO. So I think again, a lot of this goes back to the whole what's very unique about Europe, which is. That after the Cold War, we had this move first, that we were going to have a security architecture which wasn't linked to these competing Cold War military blocks. And again, I think people don't always appreciate what exactly happened, because if we saw in 1999 at the OSCE meeting, now the OSCE was supposed to be like an inclusive security institutions, which would reduce the role of these military alliances. We saw that the Russians, they committed themselves, for example, to withdrawing their peacekeepers from both Moldova and Georgia. However, when they saw that the OSCE would not be some inclusive, impartial security alliance because of NATO expansionism, they saw NATO effectively replacing them. They came to the conclusion they couldn't pull out because either they have their troops there or they will join NATO. So having troops in these countries became a tool for kind of imposing neutrality on them. And this has been kind of the experience over the years in Europe.
All right. Well, we are out of time, so we're going to have to leave the discussion there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Mark Farha, Happy Mon Jacob, and Glenn Deason. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.